Impromptu is my favorite kind of message because there's no prep work, right? Somehow I don't think that's right. Happy Sabbath, brethren. Glad to see you all. Okay, the title of the first message today is Love is Hard. Love is Hard. I'd like to talk today about love and work. Love and work. Again, the title is Love is Hard. In fact, I'm going to submit today that love will be the hardest work we've ever done. Love could be the hardest work that we've ever been asked to do. So let's look at work first. Let's look at work. What is work? Is it merely just action or movement? Is it more structured than that? Let's turn over to Genesis. Turn with me, if you will, to Genesis 2. Genesis 2 and verse 1. Thus the heavens and the earth and all the host of them were finished. And on the seventh day, God ended his work which he had done. And he rested on the seventh day from all his work which he had done. Then God blessed the seventh day and sanctified it, because in it he rested from all his work which God had created and made. So one of the first places here in Scripture where work is kind of described and defined has to do with creating and making. It's when God actually made a place for all of us to live. He made this earth and the place that we can dwell, this air that we can breathe, and the animals that are around, and everything that we see. He made that for us. He created a space for us. And that was the work that he did. And then he rested. And interesting note on that is that rest is defined in the context of work, right? Rest can't really be defined without work. It's to stop working for a minute. That's what it says, as soon as he stopped working, and that was the rest, right? If you rest every day, at some point it's not called resting anymore. It turns into laziness. Rest is wonderful. You've been working and you rest. That's all great. That's as it should be. If you do nothing but rest, it becomes something other than rest. It's only possible when you work that you can really understand what rest is. So yeah, what did God do here? He made a place for us. He made a home for us. And the first man that he made was named Adam. Let's turn over to, well, we're already in Genesis 2. Let's go to verse 15. Let's go to verse 15. Genesis 2 and verse 15. Then the Lord God took the man and put him in the Garden of Eden to tend and keep it. To tend and keep it. Basically, God gave Adam the responsibility of a retired state employee, I think. It's not, you don't have the sweat of the brow, but you have to take care of the garden, basically, in the yard. I'm kidding a little bit, but mostly he had to tend and keep it. That was his job. But seriously, he was put there to work the land, to work. Adam was put there and told to do a certain type of work, right? To tend, and by the way, to tend and keep the Garden of Eden, I assume, was no small task. How big was the Garden of Eden? And there was only one Adam, and it doesn't say that God gave him a weed eater or a wheelbarrow or any of those things either. So he had bare hands and sticks, so I don't know what he was working with there. But he had a lot of work in front of him. He had work to do. So God worked at the creation, and he put man here, and he told the man to work. And then if we skip all the way ahead to Jesus, let's go to a story in John. John 5. We'll see the Son of God was also a big fan of work. So much that it got him in trouble here. John 5. John 5 and verse 17. It says, but Jesus answered them, my Father has been working until now, and I have been working. But if you go back, let's read that story. It's really interesting. Chapter 5, starting at verse 1. After this, there was a feast of the Jews. Jesus went up to Jerusalem. And now there is in Jerusalem, by the sheep gate, a pool, which is called Bethesda in Hebrew, having five porches. And in these lay a great multitude of sick people, blind and lame and paralyzed, all waiting for the moving of the water. And the angel would come down at certain times into the pool, stir up the water, and whoever stepped in first was made well from whatever disease he had. That's a whole other story to dive into. But we want to look at what Jesus did here. There was a certain man, verse 5, there was a certain man who was there, had an infirmity of 38 years. Seems as if his legs were not working. Jesus saw him lying there. He knew that he had already been in that condition a long time. And he said to him, do you want to be made well? In verse 7 now, the sick man answered, sir, I have no man to put me into the pool and water. So he didn't answer his question. He started saying all this other stuff. No, I can't get in there, basically. In verse 8, Jesus said to him, rise, take your bed, and walk. And immediately the man was made well. He was made well in that moment. He took up his bed and he walked. And that day was a Sabbath day, it's noted. And verse 10, the Jews therefore said to him who was cured, it is a Sabbath. It is not lawful to carry your bed. Think about it. This man who has now freedom of legs, what he hasn't had for 38 years, and the first thing somebody says to him, some official comes by and says, you're not supposed to be carrying your bed. And he hasn't even been able to do that for his whole life. It's really interesting. And then we go on a little further. Verse 12, then they asked him, who is the man who said to you, take up your bed and walk? He's like, who told you to take up your bed, right? We got to find this lawbreaker, this man who's working on the Sabbath. But the one who was healed did not know who it was, for Jesus had withdrawn, a multitude being in that place. There were tons of people there. Verse 14, afterward, Jesus found him in the temple and said to him, see, you have been made well, sin no more, lest a worse thing come upon you. The man departed and told the Jews that it was Jesus who had made him well. And then verse 16, John 5 and verse 16, for this reason the Jews persecuted Jesus and sought to kill him because he had done these things on the Sabbath. But Jesus answered them and said, my Father has been working until now, and I have been working. Therefore the Jews sought all the more to kill him, because not only did he break the Sabbath, but also he said that God was his Father, making himself equal with God. So then Jesus answered them and said, most assuredly I say to you, the Son can do nothing of himself but what he sees the Father do. Notice down in verse 20. For the Father loves the Son and shows him all the things he himself does. And he will show him greater works than these that you may marvel. I find this is interesting because it doesn't seem like marveling is what they're doing at the moment. It seems like they want to put him to death. They're after him. They're angry at him. And it almost sounds as if he's using a little bit of sarcasm, like, oh, you like that I've healed this man at the well? Something much bigger than this is coming. Just wait. There's more to come. There's more. You know, if you like this, there's bigger ones that are coming down the line. But notice what Jesus did. In this act of love for this man, they were only focused on the work part of it. They were angry that he worked on the Sabbath, right? But what did Jesus actually do? He said, I and my Father have been working, right? My Father has been working and so am I. But what did he do for this man? He made a way for him. He made a place for him in the way. He gave him freedom, in a sense. Who here has just recently received your license? Anybody in the past year or so received your license in this room? Nobody. Okay, well, do you remember that feeling? Because I do. When you first got your car, you first got your hands on the wheel, you got some gas in the tank, and you can go anywhere. I mean, within reason. What a feeling to be 16 years, you know, in your home, trapped. You can't go anywhere. And then you finally get that car. Can you imagine 38 years you've been laying in the same spot? And Jesus gives him this freedom. Like, how much better is that, you know? So he gave them this. And again, imagine getting those legs, the ability to roam about the earth freely after that amount of time. Jesus made it possible for him to move, for him to live, for him to have some sort of movement and freedom. And if you think about it, it's the same thing that God did in the beginning. He gave us the ability to have some movement and some freedom. He gave us a garden and a boundary. He gave us the law, which is this law of liberty, which is, again, a boundary of freedom, so that within that we can move freely. We can have some area to move and be creative. That's what they're about. I'd like to talk about, as we're talking about work, there's always the first one who does the work. And the first one who does the work, it's the hardest thing. The first one to till the ground in any given place, it's the hardest to till. The first one to break through a path, a new path in a jungle or in a forest, it's the hardest one, right? That first walk through that path is the hardest time. Everybody that comes after him, it'll be easier and easier, right? The first guy tramples down some thorns, he cuts some branches off. You can kind of see where he's been and you can follow. Jesus was that for us on the greatest scale. He was the pioneer. It takes work to be the pioneer. It takes work to make a space, to make a place for somebody else to come behind you. It takes work. And God and Jesus have been doing this for us from the beginning. Again, they made actual space. They made the earth, which is a place for us to live right now. They made all that for us. The one who creates that space does constant work to give to everyone else, to give everyone else just the freedom to move and to be. And just like God does that to us, we must do that. We do that here at church. We do that in our home with our children. It happens on every level. So Jesus was that pioneer. That pioneer is in a unique position. He's in a different position from everyone who follows behind him. The pioneer is in an uncomfortable position. The first one to go and do a thing is the hardest, right? The life of the pioneer is uncertain, uncomfortable, unplanned sometimes. There's some insecurity there. That pioneer must be driven by something that's unseen. He doesn't get to watch the person go in front of him and just follow. He has to go driven by hope, driven by faith. For all of us, we get to follow. We get to follow, right? Christ was that pioneer in that way, and we get to follow him. All we have to do is do what he did, right? And I say that like it's not the hardest thing on the planet. But it is. It's the hardest thing we'll ever do. But it's not as hard as what he did. Because he was the first one down the path. He made a way. So God works. He put us here to work. Jesus works with his Father. And he wants us to work now. Let's turn to Philippians 2. What does it look like, brethren? What does that look like, that he wants us to work? Philippians 2. And verse 12. Philippians 2 and verse 12. Therefore, my beloved, as you have always obeyed, not as in my presence only, but now much more in my absence, work out your own salvation with fear and trembling. For it is God who works in you, both to will and to do, for his good pleasure. Verse 14. Do all things without complaining and disputing, that you may become blameless and harmless, children of God without fault, in the midst of a crooked and perverse generation, among whom you shine as lights in the world, holding fast the word of life, so that I may rejoice in the day of Christ that I have not run in vain or labored in vain. So God works in us. Christ works in us. He works in us both to will and to do. But what does that look like, right? Just as we read it, verse 13, and then in verse 14, he starts telling us all these things to do. Do these things without complaining, without disputing. So that still takes every ounce of strength that we have to follow, right? So then we're called to work and do the same work that he's doing. We're called to create spaces for other people, to make ways for them. This is something that we all take part of here at church. When we come here and gather for the Sabbath, we create a space for the brethren to dwell, for the brethren to be. And it's something that so many of us are part of helping in. Everybody provides a little bit of their own work. And we work to make this place a place where somebody else can feel the benefit of what it feels like to follow. You know, growing up, I had a great relationship with my dad. I remember walking in his wing, you know, my whole life and feeling everywhere he goes, I would go. And it's pretty easy to follow. It's pretty easy to follow along. When you go to school, the systems are all mapped out. The classes are all laid out. The halls are already there. You just follow along. You just go where people tell you. It's no big deal. But at some point, as we grow up, we get to be the person at the beginning of the line. At some point, we get to be the pioneer in some way for our family, maybe at work. And it was at that moment I remember realizing, oh, this is hard. And feeling this feeling of, this is not quite so fun anymore, right? To be the first one down the path, taking all the cobwebs in the face, it's not quite so fun anymore. And that really made me have great respect and appreciation for all those years before when other people had been doing that hard work. Other people had been blazing those trails, and I had just been following. Because every time we walk down a path that's already been paved like that, it's already been cleared, somebody else has done that work. So when we come here for church, you know, potlucks don't just pop into existence out of nowhere. Everybody pitches in. Everybody does their thing. They bring their dishes and they set up the chairs. We have to rent the hall. We have to write the messages. We have to do all the things that it takes to make this whole service run. And how much work is put into that by each and every member so that we can then come and share in that experience. So we brethren are called to be pioneers at times, stepping out, being the first one to create a space for someone else so that they can come and listen or come and be encouraged. And that's the kind of work that he wants us to do. Again, that's not only true here, but it's also true in our homes. We have to be those pioneers for our children, doing that work, doing that hardest work, being the first ones to show what it looks like to say I'm sorry, to have courage to try new things, to clean up after ourselves, whatever it is, all those little things. We have four little ones at home right now, and it's on us as parents. It's on me and my wife to be those pioneers. We don't have someone there in the home we can follow and just blindly do what they're doing, right? But the kids are going to follow us no matter what. So we have to be those pioneers showing them the right way over and over and over. It takes work. Every thought, every action takes work. And that's what Christ did for us. So we've looked at God and what he did at the work of creation, the work that Adam had to do, and the work that Christ did as well. Barely touched on that. Each making a place for the next. Working. Making a way. Carrying that cross, literally and figuratively, Christ did. And those things, all those acts of work, can also be defined as love. They can also be defined as love. Let's turn over to John 3:16. John 3:16, very popular verse. What does it mean to love, brethren? What does that mean? We're going to look at that. And when I ask what does it mean to love, I don't mean how does it feel to be loved. There's two different things. There's the feeling of being loved, and then there's the action of loving. And those are two totally different things. There's that feeling of being understood and cared for, that feeling when we get someone that does something that we appreciate. That feels great, and we can feel loved in those moments. But that's not what it means to love. It's two different sides of the same coin. Receiving someone else's love feels wonderful. It can fill us up. But that person who did the thing to make you feel loved, they did some work. They did some work for you. They did something that took thought and consideration, maybe some sacrifice. And that's what it means to love. John 3:16. For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whosoever believes in him should not perish but have eternal life. So how much did God love us? You know, we can see here that he didn't just say it, he showed it. This wasn't just a feeling that he had. This wasn't just some sounds that he made in our direction. I love you. No, not only did he create us here in the first place, and he gave us this place to dwell full of wonderful creatures and brothers and sisters, and he developed this intricate and perfect plan to bring us into his family forever. But he sacrificed part of himself and put his own son to death. That's called love. 1 Corinthians 13, turn there with me if you want to. First Corinthians 13, often referred to as the love chapter, in verse 1. Though I speak with the tongues of men and angels, but have not love, I've become a sounding brass or a clanging cymbal. And though I have the gift of prophecy and understand all mysteries and all knowledge, and though I have all faith that I can move mountains, but I have not love, I am nothing. So we see that it's important, but what is it? Verse 3, and though I bestow my goods to feed the poor, and though I give my body to be burned, I have not love, it profits me nothing. Verse 4, we start to get some definition. Love suffers long and is kind. It does not envy. It does not parade itself. It is not puffed up. It does not behave rudely. It does not seek its own. It is not provoked. Thinks no evil. Verse 6, does not rejoice in iniquity, but rejoices in the truth. Bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. Love never fails. Prophecies, tongues, knowledge, all those things will fail and vanish away, it says, but love never fails. So what's love? It sounds a lot like work. Sounds kind of hard to do all those things. Let's turn to John 4. John 4. John 4 and verse 7. So God loved us, brethren, and now it's our turn. Now it's our turn to love one another and to show that love in the form of work, in the form of creating a space for them, making a place for them. John 4 and verse 7. Dear friends, let us love one another, for love comes from God. Everyone who has been born of God and knows God, whoever does not love does not know God, because God is love. And this is how God showed his love among us. He sent his only Son into the world that we might live through him. This is love, not that we love God, but that he loved us and sent his Son as an atoning sacrifice for our sins. Dear friends, since God so loved us, we ought to love one another. And if you skip down to verse 19, John 4 and verse 19, am I in 1 John? Yeah. 1 John 4 and verse 19, is that right? No. Oh yeah, I'm in the wrong place somehow. Somebody knows where I'm at. 1 John 4. Okay, yeah. In verse 19, we love because he first loved us. Whoever claims to love God yet hates a brother or sister is a liar. For whoever does not love their brother and sister whom they have seen cannot love God who they have not seen. And he has given us this command. Anyone who loves God must also love their brother and sister. So he loved us. He loved us first. And then now it's our turn. We have to do the same thing. And as we read some of the definition of love there, love is work. It sounds like at the very least it involves hard work. To be a pioneer for someone else takes work. But that's one of the most loving things we could do. Patience, forgiveness, honesty, tactfulness, courage, right? Doing it all when we don't really feel like doing it, that's love. I know many of you in this room, just as I have had small children, and there's so many sleepless nights, and the PG version is messes to clean up all over the house, the ceiling and the walls. That's love. In the middle of the night when you think, I haven't slept in so long, and I just want to go back to bed. Why do I still hear the crying? And we're a little ways from that now, which is great. But every one of those moments is love. Giving that to our children, right? So that they can then wake up in a house that's mostly clean and they have food that's mostly good and they have a place they can be there in freedom without fear. A little garden that they can help tend and keep, but it's a safe place for the most part. So Christ worked so that we can work. Brethren, we are called to do the hardest thing that any human could ever do. This thing of love is no simple thing. It's not just a feeling. It's not just something that's ethereal that we can just say. It's something that we have to do. Putting our own self to death, metaphorically, and putting on the new man so that ultimately we can all work together. We have all kinds of work that we have to do. We have to do the work of raising children, the work of loving one another, the work of an evangelist for some of us, and Timothy talks about. You know, the love of one another is where I want to focus just for a second. Marriage is work, right? Anybody married can probably attest to that. I'll raise my hand. It's work. It is. Before I got married, I'm a pretty positive person. And so normally when the naysayers talk, I just ignore them. I think they don't know what they're talking about. But I remember a lot of people saying things like, you can't possibly understand how hard it's going to be, you know, and things like that. And I remember thinking, nah, how hard could it really be, you know? How could it be that hard? I'm easy to get along with, right? Raise your hand if you're easy to get along with. Anybody? See, how hard could it be? Turns out I'm not, actually, and I think we're all delusional, you know? It's been the hardest thing that we've ever done, but that's exactly what we're called to do. We're called to do the hardest thing that we could possibly do. That's it. That's the thing. You know, if you feel loved, that's great. And sometimes early in a relationship, there are some of these feelings, and I feel this feeling, and we call that love. Well, it kind of is. But feeling love and giving love are two totally different things, right? And in order for me to have that feeling ongoing in my life, somebody somewhere has to be working to make that happen. Right? They have to be picking up the pants that I threw on the floor. They have to be washing the dishes that I left on. Right? Those things, that's the kind of to make you feel loved, stuff has to be happening. And for me to make other people feel loved, I have to be doing things. It's not just something that happens. So if we decide we're gonna love someone else, we ought to keep in mind it'll be the hardest thing we've ever done. Nothing less than labor and work. And the thing about that work is it's work that we didn't even imagine that we would have to do. I'm a pretty imaginative person. I remember hearing those people say, it's so hard, and I remember thinking all the ways in which I thought it could be hard. And I had this whole list in my head, and I thought, that's fine, I can handle all that. Turns out there's a whole other list. And I didn't even know it was there. I didn't know it was going to be hard in that way, and that way, and that way, right? There's a song, I think, from the 80s. by Meatloaf. Anybody know it? I would do anything for love, but I won't do that. Well, Meatloaf got it wrong, okay? That is the one thing that you have to do. I don't know. I don't actually know what he was talking about in this song, so we won't take that any further. But, you know, that thing you didn't think you would ever have to do, that's the thing. That's the thing you have to actually overcome. And it's the hardest thing we'll ever be asked to do. So, brethren, God created this planet. He made a space for us all to live here in freedom. He sent his son to die to do this work of being this pioneer, to make the way so that we wouldn't be slaves to sin. So that, again, we could have freedom. Doing that work to show us love. Jesus Christ made a path from here to eternity. He cleared out the cobwebs, right? Now it's our turn. Now we have to follow. We have to follow in that way, in the way we live, the way we think, the way we treat each other, the way we treat our family. And we must do the hardest thing that anyone has ever asked us to do, which is to work with the other person in mind. And that's what love is. Love is work. Work is love, and love is hard.